Reyes cut him off. Not she. She spared our lives there on the pack ice, though she could have slaughtered and drowned us like pups. All of us. Tawny Owl too.
Very well. Dacre spat on the flags of the courtyard. He'll reward her for that mercy, together with the sorcerer and Bonart. You'll see, mun. Now they'll gut her ceremonially. They'll flay her in thin strips. I'm inclined to believe they'll flay her, snapped Boreas, because they're butchers. And we ain't no better, since we serve under them. And do we have a choice? We don't.
One of Skellen's mercenaries suddenly cried softly, and another followed suit. One man swore, another gasped. Someone pointed silently. As far as the eye could see, black birds were sitting on the battlements, on the corbels, on the roofs of the towers, on the cornices, on the windowsills and gables, on the gutters and on the gargoyles and mascarons. They had flown from the ship's graveyard noiselessly, without cawing, and now they were sitting in silence, waiting.
"This ain't death," mumbled one of the mercenaries.
"And carrion," added a second. "We don't have a choice," Silophon repeated mechanically, looking at Boreas.
Boreas Munn looked at the birds.
"Perhaps it's time we did," he replied softly.
They climbed a great staircase with three landings, walked along a long corridor between an avenue of statues set in niches, and passed through a cloister surrounding a vestibule. Ciri walked boldly, feeling no anxiety. Neither the weapons nor her escort's murderous visages caused her fear. She had lied, saying she couldn't remember the faces of the men from the frozen lake. She did remember. She remembered seeing Stefan Skellen, the same man now leading her with a gloomy expression deeper into that huge, awful castle, as he shook, teeth chattering on the ice. Now, as he looked around and glared at her from time to time, she sensed he was still a little afraid of her. She breathed more deeply. They entered a hall beneath a high star vault supported on columns beneath great spidery chandeliers. Ciri saw who was waiting there for her. Fear dug its claw-like fingers into her guts, clenched its fist, tugged and twisted. Bonart was by her in three strides. He grabbed her by the front of her jerkin, lifted her up and pulled her towards him at the same time, bringing her face closer to his pale, fishy eyes.
"Hell must indeed be dreadful," he roared, "if you've chosen me."
She didn't reply. She could smell alcohol on his breath.
"And maybe hell didn't want you, you little beast. Perhaps that devilish tower spat you out in disgust after tasting your venom."
He drew her closer. She turned aside and drew back her face.
"You're right," he said softly. "You're right to be afraid. It's the end of your road. You won't escape from here. Here, in this castle, I'll bleed you dry." "Have you finished, Mr. Bonart?"
She knew at once who had spoken. The sorcerer Vilgefortz, who first of all had been a prisoner in manacles and afterwards pursued her in the Tower of the Gull. He had been very handsome then, on the island. Now something in his face had changed, something that made it ugly and fearful.
"Mr. Bonart,"
the sorcerer didn't even move on his throne-like armchair,
"let me assume the pleasant duty of welcoming to Stigger Castle our guest, Miss Cyrilla of Sintra, the daughter of Pavetta, the granddaughter of Calanthe, the descendant of the famous Lara Dorin ap Shardal. Greetings. Please come closer."
The derision, hidden beneath the mask of civility, slipped out from the sorcerer's last words. There was nothing but a threat and order in them. Ciri felt at once that she would be unable to resist that order. She felt fear. Ghastly fear.
"Closer," hissed Vilgefortz.
Now she noticed what was wrong with his face. His left eye, considerably smaller than his right, blinked, flickered, and spun around like a mad thing in the wrinkled grey-blue eye socket. The sight was gruesome.
"A brave pose," A trace of fear in the face, said the sorcerer, tilting his head. My acknowledgements. Assuming your courage doesn't result from stupidity, I shall dispel any possible fantasies at once. You will not escape from here, as Mr. Bonnard correctly observed, neither by teleportation nor with the help of your own special abilities.
She knew he was right. Previously, she had persuaded herself that if it came to it, she would always, even at the last moment, be able to flee and hide amidst times and places. Now she knew that was an illusory hope, a fantasy. The castle positively vibrated with strange, evil, hostile magic, and that magic was pervading, penetrating her. It crawled like a parasite over her innards, repulsively slithering over her brain. She could do nothing about it. She was in her enemy's power. Helpless. Too bad, she thought. I knew what I was doing. I knew what I was coming here for. The rest was really just fantasy. May what has to happen, happen.
Well done, said Vilgefortz. An accurate assessment of the situation. What must happen will happen. Or, more precisely, what I decide will happen. I wonder if you're also guessing, my splendid one, what I shall decide.
She was about to answer, but before she could overcome the resistance of her tight, dry throat, he anticipated her by reading her thoughts.
Of course, you know. Master of worlds. Master of times and places. Yes, yes, my splendid one. Your visit didn't surprise me. Quite simply, I know where you escaped to from the lake and how you did it. I know how you got here. The one thing I don't know is, was it a long way? And did it provide you with many thrills? Oh!
He smiled nastily, anticipating her once again.
You don't have to reply. I know it was interesting and exciting. You see, I can't wait to try it myself. I'm very envious of your talent. You'll have to share it with me, my splendid one. Yes, have to are the right words. Until you share your talent with me, I simply won't let you out of my hands. I won't let you out of my hands, neither by day nor by night.
Ciri finally understood it wasn't only fear squeezing her throat. The sorcerer was gagging and choking her magically. He was mocking her, humiliating her, in front of everyone.
Let Yennefer go!
She coughed so hard, she arched her back with the effort.
Let her go, and you can do what you want with me!
Bonhart roared with laughter, and Stefan Skellen also laughed dryly. Vilgefortz poked the corner of his gruesome eye with his little finger.
You can't be so slow-witted not to know that I can do what I want with you in any case. Your offer is pompous, and that's pathetic and ridiculous.
You need me.
She raised her head, although it cost her an enormous amount of strength.
To have a child with me. Everybody wants that. You too. Yes, I'm in your power. I came here by myself. You didn't catch me, although you pursued me through half the world. I came here by myself, and I'm giving myself up to you for Yennefer, for her life. Is it so ridiculous to you? So try using violence and force with me. You'll see. You'll be over your desire to laugh in no time.
Bonnard leapt at her and swung his scourge. Vilgefortz made an apparently careless gesture, just a slight movement of the hand,
But even that was enough for the whip to fly from the hunter's hand, and he staggered as though hit by a coal wagon.
I see Mr. Bonhart still has difficulty understanding the responsibilities of a guest, said Vilgefortz, massaging his fingers. Try to remember, when one is a guest, one doesn't destroy the furniture or works of art, nor steal small objects, nor does one soil the carpets or inaccessible places. One doesn't rape or beat other guests, the latter two not, at least, until the host has finished raping and beating. Not until he gives the sign that one may now rape and beat. You too, Ciri, ought to be able to draw the appropriate conclusions from what I've said. You can't? I'll help you. You surrender yourself to me and humbly agree to everything. Allow me to do anything I want with you. You think your offer highly generous. You're mistaken. For the matter is that I shall do with you what I have to do, not what I'd like to do. An example. I'd like to gouge out at least one of your eyes as revenge for Thanev, but I can't, because I'm afraid you wouldn't survive it.
Ciri knew it was now or never. She spun around in a half turn and jerked Swallow from the scabbard. The entire castle suddenly whirled, and she felt herself falling, painfully banging her knees. She bent over, her forehead almost touching the floor, fighting the urge to vomit. The sword slipped from her numb fingers. Someone lifted her up.
Yes, Vilgefortz drawled,
resting his chin on hands held together as if in prayer.
Where was I? Ah, yes, that's right, your offer. Yennefer's life and freedom in exchange for what? For your voluntary surrender, willingly, without violence or compulsion? I'm sorry, Ciri. Violence and compulsion are simply essential to what I shall do to you. Yes, yes, he repeated,
watching with interest as the girl wheezed, spat, and tried to vomit.
It simply won't happen without violence or compulsion. You would never agree voluntarily to what I shall do to you, I assure you. So, as you must see, your offer, still pathetic and ridiculous, is, furthermore, worthless. So I reject it. Go on, take her to the laboratory at once.
The laboratory didn't differ much from the one Ciri knew from the Temple of Melitela in Elendur. It was also brightly lit, clean, with long metal-topped tables laden with glass. Large jars, retorts, flasks, test tubes, pipes, lenses, hissing and bubbling alembics and other strange apparatus. Here also, as in Elendur, it smelled strongly of ether, alcohol, formalin, and something else. Something that triggered fear. Even in the friendly temple, beside the friendly priestesses and a friendly Yennefer, Ciri had felt fear in the laboratory. And after all, in Elendur, no one had dragged her to the laboratory by force. No one had brutally shoved her onto a bench, and no one had held her shoulders and arms in an iron grip. In Elendur, there hadn't been a dreadful steel chair whose purpose was quite sadistically obvious. There had been no shaven-headed characters dressed in white in the middle of the laboratory, no Bonhart and no Skellen, excited, flushed and licking his lips. And neither was there Vilgefortz, with one normal eye and the other tiny and twitching hideously. Vilgefortz turned around from the table where he had spent a long time arranging some sinister-looking instruments.
"Do you see, my splendid maiden?" he began,
walking towards her.
"That you are the key to mastery and power? Not only over this world, a vanity of vanities doomed in any case to early extinction, but over all worlds, over the whole compass of places and times which have arisen since the conjunction. You certainly understand me. You have already visited some of those places and times. I'm ashamed to admit it," he continued a moment later, rolling up his sleeves, "but I'm terribly attracted by power. It's crude, I know. But I want to be a ruler.
A ruler before whom people will bow down, whom people will bless simply because I let them be, and whom they will worship as a god, if, let's say, I decide to save their world from a cataclysm, even if I only save it on a whim. Oh, Ciri, my heart is gladdened by the thought of how magnanimously I shall reward the faithful, and how cruelly I shall punish the disobedient and arrogant. The prayers that shall be offered up by whole generations to me and for me, for my love and my mercy, will be balm and honey to my soul. Whole generations, Ciri, whole worlds, listen out. Do you hear? Deliver us from the plague, hunger, war, and wrath of Vilgefortz.
He moved his fingers just in front of her face, then violently seized her by the cheeks. Ciri screamed and struggled, but she was held firmly. Her lips began to tremble. Vilgefortz saw it and sniggered.
The child of destiny.
He laughed nervously, and white flecks of foam appeared at the corners of his mouth.
In any year, the sacred elven elderblood. Now, all mine.
He straightened up abruptly and wiped his mouth.
Various fools and mystics, he now announced in his usually cold tone, have tried to adapt you to fairy tales, legends and prophecies. Have tracked the genes you carry, your inheritance from your ancestors. Mistaking the sky for stars reflected in the surface of a pond, they mystically supposed that a gene determining great potential would continue to evolve, that it would achieve the height of power in your child, or the child of your child, and a charming aura grew around you. Incense smoke trailed behind you. But the truth is much more banal, much more mundane. Organically mundane, I'd say. Your blood, my splendid one, is important. But in the absolutely literal, quite unpoetic sense of the word.
He picked up from the table a glass syringe measuring about 6 inches. The syringe ended in a thin, slightly curved capillary. Ciri felt her mouth go dry. The sorcerer examined the syringe under the light.
In a moment, he declared coldly, you will be undressed and placed on this chair, precisely this one which you're contemplating with such curiosity. You'll spend some time in the chair, albeit in an uncomfortable position. With the help of this device, which also, as I see, is fascinating you, you will be impregnated. It won't be so awful, for almost the whole time you'll be befuddled by elixirs, which I shall give you intravenously, with the aim of implanting the fetal ovum properly and ruling out an ectopic pregnancy. You needn't be afraid. I'm skilled. I've done this hundreds of times. Never, admittedly, to a chosen one of fate and destiny, but I don't think the uteruses and ovaries of chosen ones differ so much from those of ordinary mates. And now, the most important thing.
Vilgefortz savored what he was saying.
It may worry you, or it may gratify you, but know that you won't give birth to the infant. Who knows? Perhaps it would also have been a great chosen one with extraordinary abilities, the savior of the world and the king of nations. No one, however, is able to guarantee that, and I, furthermore, have no intention of waiting that long. I need blood. More precisely, placental blood. As soon as the placenta develops, I shall remove it from you. The rest of my plans and intentions, my splendid one, will not, as you now comprehend, concern you. So there's no point informing you about them. It would only be an unnecessary frustration.
He fell silent, leaving a masterly pause. Ciri couldn't control her trembling mouth.
And now,
the sorcerer nodded theatrically,
I invite you to the chair, Miss Cirilla. It would be worth having that bitch Yennefer watching this.
Bonnard's teeth flashed beneath his grey moustaches.
She deserves it. Indeed, she does.
Small white balls of froth appeared again in the corners of Ilgefort's smiling mouth.
Impregnation is, after all, a sacred thing, solemn and ceremonial, a mystery at which one's entire close family should assist. And Yennefer is, after all, your quasi-mother, and in primitive cultures the mother virtually takes an active part in her daughter's consummation ceremony. Go on, bring her here.
But regarding that impregnation,
Bonnard bent over Ciri, whom the sorcerer's shaven-headed acolytes had begun to undress.
Couldn't one, Lord Vilgefortz, do it more normally, as nature intended?
Skellen snorted, nodding his head. Vilgefortz frowned slightly.
No, he responded coolly. No, Mr. Bonnard, one couldn't.
Ciri, as though only now realizing the gravity of the situation, uttered an ear-splitting scream. Once, and then a second time.
Well, well,
the sorcerer grimaced.
We enter the lion's den bravely, with head and sword held high, and now we're afraid of a small glass tube. For shame, young lady.
Ciri, not caring about shame, screamed so loudly the laboratory vessels jingled. And the whole of Stigger Castle suddenly responded with yelling and commotion.
"There'll be trouble, boys," repeated Zadelik,
scraping dried dung from between the stones of the courtyard with the metal-tipped butt of his ronceur.
"Or you'll see, there'll be trouble for us poor wretches."
He looked at his comrades, but none of the guards commented. Neither did Boreas Munn speak. He had remained with the guards at the gate from choice, not because of orders. He could have, like Siliphant, followed Tawny Owl, could have seen with his own eyes what would happen to the Lady of the Lake, what fate she would suffer. But Boreas didn't want to watch it. He preferred to stay here in the courtyard, beneath the open sky, far from the chambers and halls of the upper castle where they had taken the girl. He was certain that not even her screams would reach here.
"Those blackbirds are a bad sign."
Zadelik nodded at the rooks, still sitting on the walls and cornices.
"That young wench who came here on the black mare is an evil omen. We're serving Tawny Owl in an evil matter, I tell you. They're saying, in truth, that Tawny Owl himself isn't a coroner or important gentleman now, but an outlaw like us, that the Emperor has it in cruelly for him. If he seizes us all, boys, there'll be trouble for us poor wretches."
"Aye, aye,"
added another guard with long moustaches, wearing a hat decorated with black stork feathers.
"The noose is at hand. It's no good when the Emperor's angry."
"Blow that,"
interjected a third, a new arrival to Stigger Castle, with the last party of mercenaries recruited by Skellen.
"The Emperor might not have enough time for us. They say he has other concerns. They say there was a decisive battle somewhere in the north. The Nordlings beat the Imperial forces, thrashed them soundly."
"In that case," said a fourth, "perhaps it isn't so bad that we're here with Tawny Owl. Always better to be with the victors."
"No, certainly it's better," said the new one. "Tawny Owl, it seems to me, will go far, and we'll go far with him too."
"Oh, boys,"
Zadelik leaned on his ranser,
"you're as thick as pig shit."
The black birds took flight with a deafening flapping and cawing. They darkened the sky, wheeling in a flock around the bastion.
"What the fuck?" growled one of the guards.
"Open the gate, please."
Boreas Munn suddenly detected a powerful smell of herbs, sage, mint, and thyme. He swallowed and shook his head. He closed and opened his eyes. It didn't help. The thin, grey-haired, elderly man resembling a tax collector who had suddenly appeared beside them had no intention of vanishing. He stood and smiled through pursed lips. Boreas's hair almost lifted his hat up.
"Open the gate, please," repeated the smiling elderly gentleman. "Without delay, it really will be better if you do."
Zadelik dropped his ronceur with a clank, stood stiffly and moved his mouth noiselessly. His eyes were empty. The remaining men went closer to the gate, striding stiffly and unnaturally like automatons. They took down the bar and opened the hasp and staple. four riders burst into the courtyard with a thudding of horseshoes. One had hair as white as snow, and the sword in his hand flashed like lightning. Another was a fair-haired woman, bending a bow as she rode. The third rider, quite a young woman, carved open Zadalik's temple with a sweeping blow of a curved sabre. Boreas Munn picked up the ranseur and shielded himself with a shaft. The fourth rider suddenly towered over him. There were wings of a bird of prey attached to both sides of his helmet. His upraised sword shone.
"Leave him, Kair," said the white-haired man sharply. "Let's save time and blood. Milva, Regis, that way."
"No,"
mumbled Boreas, not knowing himself why he was doing it.
"Not that way. That's only a dead end. Your way is there, up that staircase, to the upper castle. If you wish to rescue the Lady of the Lake, then you must hurry."
"My thanks," said the white-haired man. "Thank you, stranger. Regis, did you hear? Lead on."
A moment later, only corpses remained in the courtyard, and Boreas Munn still leaning on the pikestaff, which he couldn't release because his legs were shaking so much. The rooks circled, cawing, over Stygger Castle, covering the towers and bastions in a shroud-like cloud. Vilgefortz listened, with stoical calm and an inscrutable expression, to the breathless report of the mercenary who had come running. But his restless and blinking eye betrayed him.
"Last ditch reinforcements,"
he ground his teeth.
"Unbelievable. Things like that don't happen. Or they do, but only in crummy, vulgar pageants, and it comes to the same thing. Do me the pleasure, good fellow, of telling me you've made it all up for, shall we say, a lark?"
"I'm not making it up," the hireling said in indignation. "I'm speaking the truth. Some horsemen have burst in, a whole hassa of them."
"Very well, very well,"
the sorcerer interrupted.
"I was joking. Skellen, deal with this matter personally. It'll be a chance to demonstrate how much your army, hired with my gold, is worth."
Tawny Owl leapt up, nervously waving his arms.
"Aren't you treating this too lightly, Vilgefortz?" he yelled. "You, it seems, don't realize the gravity of the situation. If the castle is being attacked, it's by Emir's army, and that means..."
"It doesn't mean anything,"
the sorcerer cut him off.
"But I know what you have in mind. Very well. If the fact that you have me behind you will improve your morale, have it as you will. Let's go. You too, Mr. Bonnard. As far as you're concerned..."
He fixed his terrible eye on Ciri.
"Don't have any false hopes. I know who's turned up here with these pathetic reinforcements worthy of a cheap farce. And I assure you, I shall turn this cheap farce into a nightmare. Hey, you!"
He nodded at the servants and acolytes.
"Shackle the girl into Meritium. Lock and bolt her in a cell and don't move an inch from the door. You'll answer with your lives for her. Understood?"
"Yes, sir."
They rushed into the corridor, and from the corridor into a large hall full of sculptures, a veritable glyptotech. No one barred their way. They only saw a few lackeys who immediately fled on seeing them. They ran up some stairs. Kair kicked a door open. Angoulême rushed inside with a battle cry, and with a blow of her sabre knocked off the helmet of a suit of armour she took for a guard standing by the door. She realised her mistake and roared with laughter.
"Look at that!"
"Angoulême!"
Geralt took her to task.
"Don't just stand there, go on!"
A door opened in front of them. Shapes loomed in the doorway. Milva bent her bow and sent off an arrow without a second thought. Somebody screamed. The door was closed. Geralt heard a bolt thudding.
"Go on, go on!" he shouted. "Don't just stand there!"
"Witcher," said Regis, "this running is senseless. I'll go off. I'll fly off and do some reconnaissance."
"Fly!"
The vampire took off as though blown by the wind. Geralt had no time to be surprised. Again, they chanced upon some men, this time armed. Kair and Angoulême jumped towards them with a yell, and the men bolted, mainly, it seemed, because of Kair and his impressive winged helmet. They dashed into the cloister and the gallery surrounding the inner vestibule. Around 20 paces separated them from the portico leading into the castle when shapes appeared on the other side of the cloister. Loud shouts echoed out, and arrows whistled.
"Take cover!" the Witcher yelled.
Arrows rained down on them. Fletchings fluttered and arrowheads sent up sparks from the floor, chipping the mouldings from the walls and showering them in fine dust.
"Get down! Behind the balustrade!"
They dropped down, hiding pell-mell behind spiral columns carved with leaves. But they didn't get away with it entirely. The Witcher heard Angoulême cry out and saw as she grabbed her arm, her sleeve, which immediately became blood-soaked.
"Angoulême!"
"It's nothing. It passed through muscle,"
the girl shouted back in only a slightly trembling voice, confirming what he had seen. Had the arrowhead shattered the bone, Angoulême would have fainted from the shock. The archers were shooting from the gallery without let-up and were shouting out, calling for reinforcements. Several of them ran off to the side to fire at the pinned-down party from an acute angle. Geralt swore, assessing the distance separating them from the arcade. Things looked bad, but to stay where they were meant death.
"Let's make a run for it," he yelled. "Ready? Gaer, help Angoulême."
"They'll slaughter us.
Run for it, we have to."
"No!"
screamed Milva, standing up with bow in hand. She straightened up, assumed a shooting position, a veritable statue, a marble Amazon with a bow. The marksman on the gallery yelled. Milva lowered her head. One of the archers flew backwards, slamming against the wall, and a bloody splash resembling a huge octopus bloomed on the stone. A cry resounded from the gallery, a roar of anger, fury, and horror.
"By the great sun," groaned Caer.
Geralt squeezed his shoulder.
"Let's make a run for it. Help Angoulême."
The marksman on the gallery directed all their fire at Milva. The archer didn't even twitch, although all around her it was dusty with plaster, chips of marble and splinters of shattering shafts. She calmly released the bowstring. Another yell, and another archer tumbled over like a ragdoll, splashing his companions with blood and brains.
"Now!"
yelled Geralt, seeing the guards fleeing from the gallery, dropping to the floor, hiding from the deadly arrowheads. Only the three bravest were still shooting. An arrowhead thudded against a pillar, showering Milva in a cloud of plaster dust. The archer blew on her hair, which was falling over her face, and bent her bow.
"Milva!"
Geralt, Angoulême, and Caer had reached the arcade.
"Leave it! Run!"
"One more little shot," said the archer,
with a fletching of an arrow in the corner of her mouth. The bowstring slapped. One of the three brave men howled, leaned over the balustrade, and plummeted downwards onto the flags of the courtyard. At the sight, courage immediately deserted the others. They fell to the floor and pressed themselves against it. Those who had arrived were in no hurry to come out onto the gallery and expose themselves to Milva's shooting. With one exception. Milva measured him up at once. Short, slim, swarthy, with a bracer on his left forearm rubbed to a shine and an archer's glove on his right hand. She saw him lift a shapely composite bow with a profiled carved riser, saw him tauten it smoothly. She saw the bowstring, tightened to its full draw, cross his swarthy face, saw the red-feathered fletching touch his cheek. She saw him aim carefully. She tossed her bow up, tightened it smoothly, already aiming as she did so. The bowstring touched her face, the feather of the fletching, the corner of her mouth.
"Harder! Harder, Mariska! All the way to your cheek! Twist the bowstring with your fingers so the arrow doesn't fall from the rest! Hand tight against your cheek. Aim. Both eyes open. Now hold your breath. Shoot!"
The bowstring, in spite of the woolen bracer, stung her left forearm painfully. Her father was about to speak when he was seized by a coughing fit. A heavy, dry, painful coughing fit.
"He's coughing worse and worse," thought Mariska Baring, lowering her bow. "More and more horribly, and more often. He started coughing yesterday as he was aiming at a book, and for dinner there was only boiled pigweed. I can't stand boiled pigweed. I hate hunger and poverty."
Old Baring sucked in air, wheezing gratingly.
"Your arrow passed a span from the bullseye, lass. A whole span. And I've told you, ain't I, not to twitch when you're letting the bowstring go. And you're hopping about like a slug's crawled into your arse crack. And you take too long aiming. You're shooting with a weary arm. That's how you waste arrows."
"But I hit the target.
And not a span at all, but half a span from the bullseye.
Don't talk back. How the gods punish me by sending me a clod of a lass instead of a son.
I ain't a clod.
We'll soon find out. Shoot one more time, and mark what I told you. You're to stand like you were sunk into the ground. Aim, and shoot swiftly. Why are you making faces?
Because you're bad-mouthing me.
It's my fatherly right. Shoot.
She drew back the bow, sullen and close to tears. He noticed.
I love you, Mariska, he said softly. Always mind that.
She released the bowstring when the fletching had barely touched the corner of her mouth.
Well done, said her father. Well done, lass.
And coughed horribly, wheezingly. The swarthy archer from the gallery died outright. Milva's arrow struck him below his left armpit and penetrated deep, more than halfway up the shaft, shattering his ribs, pulverizing his lungs and heart. The swarthy archer's red feathered arrow, released a split second earlier, struck Milva low in the belly and exited at the back, having shattered her pelvis and pulverized her intestines and arteries. The archer fell to the floor as though rammed. Geralt and Kaia shouted with one voice, heedless that at the sight of Milva's collapse the marksmen from the gallery had once again picked up their bows. They jumped out from the portico protecting them, grabbed the archer and dragged her back, scornful of the hail of arrows. One of the arrowheads rang against Kaia's helmet. Another, Geralt would have sworn, parted his hair. Milva left behind her a broad and glistening trail of blood. In the blink of an eye, a huge pool had appeared in the place they laid her down. Kaia cursed, his hands shaking. Geralt felt despair overcoming him. And fury.
Auntie!
Howled Angoulême.
Auntie! Don't die!
Maria Baring opened her mouth, coughed horrifyingly, spitting blood under her chin.
I love you too, Papa,
she said quite distinctly, and died. The shaven-headed acolytes couldn't cope with the struggling and yelling Ciri, and lackeys rushed to help them. One, kicked between the legs, leapt back, bent over double, and fell to his knees, grabbing his crotch and gasping spasmodically for air. But that only infuriated the others. Ciri was punched in the neck and slapped in the face. They knocked her over. Someone kicked her hard in the hip, and someone else sat down on her shins. One of the bald acolytes, a young character with evil green and gold eyes, kneeled on her chest, dug his fingers into her hair, and tugged it hard. Ciri howled. The acolyte also howled, and goggled. Ciri saw streams of blood gushing from his shaven head, staining his white laboratory coat with a macabre design. The next second, hell broke loose in the laboratory. Overturned furniture banged. The high-pitched cracking and crunching of breaking glass merged with the hellish moaning of people. The decocts, filters, elixirs, extracts, and other magical substances spilling over the tables and floor mixed up and combined, some of them hissing on contact and belching clouds of yellow smoke. The room was instantly filled with a pungent stench. Amidst the smoke, through tears brought on by the smell of burning, Ciri saw to her horror a black shape resembling an enormous bat dashing around the laboratory at an incredible speed. She saw the bat in flight, slashing the men, and saw them falling over, screaming. In front of her eyes, a lackey trying hard to flee was picked up from the floor and flung onto a table, where he thrashed around, splashed blood, and finally croaked among smashed retorts, alembics, test tubes, and flasks. The mixture of spilled liquids splashed onto a lamp. It hissed, stinking, and flames suddenly exploded in the laboratory. A wave of heat dispersed the smoke. She clenched her teeth so as not to scream. A slender, grey-haired man, dressed elegantly in black, was sitting on the steel chair meant for her. The man was calmly biting and sucking on the neck of the shaven-headed acolyte slumped over his knee. The acolyte squealed shrilly and twitched convulsively, his extended legs and arms jerking rhythmically. Corpse blue flames were dancing on the metal tabletop. Retorts and flasks exploded with a thud one after another. The vampire tore his pointed fangs from the victim's neck and fixed his agate black eyes on Ciri.
There are occasions,
he said in an explanatory tone, licking blood from his lips,
when it's simply impossible not to have a drink. Don't fear,
he smiled, seeing her expression.
Don't fear, Ciri. I'm glad I found you. My name's Emil Regis. I am, although it may seem strange to you, a comrade of the Witcher Geralt. I came here with him to rescue you.
An armed mercenary rushed into the blazing laboratory. Geralt's comrade turned his head towards him, hissed and bared his fangs. The mercenary howled horrifyingly. The howling went on for a long time before it faded into the distance. Emil Regis threw the acolyte's body, motionless and soft as a rag, from his knee, stood up and stretched just like a cat.
Who'd have thought it, he said. Just some runt, and what good blood inside him. What hidden talents. Come with me, Cirilla, I'll take you to Geralt.
No, mumbled Ciri.
You don't have to be afraid of me.
I'm not,
she protested, bravely fighting with her teeth, which insisted on chattering.
That's not what it's about. But Yennefer is imprisoned here somewhere. I have to free her as quickly as possible. I'm afraid that Vilgefortz, Mr.
Emil Regis.
Warn Geralt, good sir, that Vilgefortz is here. He's a sorcerer, a powerful sorcerer. Geralt has to be on his guard.
You're to be on your guard,
repeated Regis, looking at Milva's body,
because Vilgefortz is a powerful mage. Meanwhile, she's setting Yennefer free.
Geralt swore.
Come on,
he yelled, trying to revive the low spirits of his companions with a shout.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Angoulême stood up and wiped away her tears.
Let's go. It's time to kick a few fucking arses.
I feel such strength inside me. I could probably lay waste to this entire castle,
hissed the vampire, smiling gruesomely. The Witcher glanced at him suspiciously.
Don't go that far, he said, but force your way through to the upper floor and make a bit of a racket to draw their attention away from me. I'll try to find Ciri. It wasn't good. It wasn't good, vampire, that you left her alone.
She demanded it,
Regis explained calmly, using a tone and attitude that ruled out any discussion.
She astonished me, I admit.
I know. Go to the upper floor. Look after yourselves. I'll try to find her, or Yennefer.
He found her, and quite quickly. He ran into them all of a sudden, completely unexpectedly, coming around a bend in a corridor. He saw, and the sight made the adrenaline prick the veins on the back of his hands. Several lackeys were dragging Yennefer along the corridor. The sorceress was dishevelled and shackled in chains, which didn't stop her kicking and struggling and swearing like a trooper. Geralt didn't let the lackeys get over their astonishment. He only struck once, with one short thrust from the elbow. The man howled like a dog, staggered, smashed his head with a clank and a thud against a suit of plate armour standing in an alcove, and slid down it, smearing blood over the steel plates. The remaining ones, there were three of them, released Yennefer and leapt aside, apart from the fourth, who seized the sorceress by the hair and held a knife to her throat just above her demeritium collar.
Don't come any closer, he howled. I'll slit her throat. I'm not joking. Neither am I.
Geralt swung his sword around and looked the thug in the eyes. That was enough for him. He released Yennefer and joined his companions. All of them were now holding weapons. One of them wrenched an antique but menacing-looking halberd from a panoply on the wall. All of them, crouching, were vacillating between attack and defence.
I knew you'd come,
said Yennefer, straightening up proudly.
Geralt, show these scoundrels what a witch's sword can do.
She raised her cuffed hands high, tautening the links of the chain. Geralt grasped his sail in both hands, tilted his head slightly and aimed, and smote. So swiftly, no one saw the movement of the blade. The links fell onto the floor with a clank. One of the servants gasped. Geralt grasped the hilt more tightly and moved his index finger under the crossguard.
Stand still, Yen. Head slightly to one side, please.
The sorceress didn't even flinch. The sound of metal being struck by the sword was very faint. The demeritium collar fell down beside the manacles. Only a single tiny drop appeared on Yennefer's neck. She laughed, massaging her wrists, and turned towards the lackeys. None of them could endure her gaze. The one with the halberd placed the antique weapon gingerly on the floor, as though afraid it would clank.
"Let Tawny Owl," he mumbled, "fight someone like that himself. My life is dear to me."
"They ordered us,"
muttered another, withdrawing.
"They ordered us. We were captive. After all, we weren't rude to you, madam, in your prison."
A third licked his lips.
"Testify to that."
"Be gone,"
said Yennefer. Freed from the Demeritium manacles, erect, with her head proudly raised, she looked like a titaness. Her unruly black mane seemed to reach up to the vault. The lackeys fled, furtively and without looking back. Having shrunk to her normal dimensions, Yennefer fell on Geralt's neck.
"I knew you'd come for me,"
she murmured, searching for his mouth with hers.
"That you'd come, whatever might happen."
"Let's go," he said after a moment, gasping for air. "Now for Ciri."
"Ciri,"
she said, and a second later, a menacing violet glow lit up in her eyes.
"And Vilgefortz."
A man with a crossbow came around the corner, yelled and shot, aiming at the sorceress. Geralt leapt as though propelled by a spring, brandished his sword, and the deflected bolt flew right over the crossbowman's head, so close he had to crouch. He didn't manage to straighten up, though, for the Witcher leapt forward and filleted him like a carp. Two more were still standing in the corridor, also holding crossbows. They also fired, but their hands were shaking too much to find the target. The next moment, the Witcher was upon them and they were both dead.
"Which way, Yen?"
The sorceress focused, closing her eyes.
"That way, up those stairs."
"Are you sure it's the right way?"
"Yes."
They were attacked by thugs just around the bend in the corridor, not far from a portal decorated with an archivolt. There were more than 10 of them, and they were armed with spears, partisans, and corsic. They were even determined and fierce. In spite of that, it didn't take long. Yennefer stabbed one of them in the center of the chest at once with a fiery arrowhead shot from her hand. Geralt whirled in a pirouette and fell among the others, the dwarven sile flashing and hissing like a snake. Once four had fallen, the rest fled, the corridors echoing with their clanking and stamping.
"Everything in order, Yen?"
"Couldn't be better."
Vilgefortz stood beneath the archivolt.
"I'm impressed," he said calmly and resonantly. "I really am impressed, Witcher. You're naive and hopelessly stupid, but your technique is impressive."
"Your brigands," Yennefer replied just as calmly, "have just beaten a retreat, leaving you at our mercy. Hand Ciri over, and we'll spare your life."
"Do you know, Yennefer, that that's the second such generous offer I've had today?"
The sorcerer grinned.
"Thank you, thank you. And here's my answer."
"Look out!"
yelled Yennefer, jumping aside. Geralt also leapt aside, just in time. The column of fire shooting from the sorcerer's outstretched hands transformed the place they had been standing a moment earlier into black and fizzing mud. The Witcher wiped soot and the remains of his eyebrows off his face. He saw Vilgefortz extend a hand. He dived aside and flattened himself against the floor behind the base of a column. There was a boom so loud it hurt their ears, and the whole castle was shaken to its foundations. Booming echoed through the castle. The walls trembled and the chandeliers jingled. A large oil portrait in a gilded frame fell with a great clatter. The mercenaries who ran up from the vestibule had abject fear in their eyes. Stefan Skellen calmed them with a menacing look and took them to task with his grim expression and voice.
"What's going on there? Talk."
"My lord coroner," wheezed one of them, "there's horror there. There's demons and devils there. They're shooting unerringly. It's a massacre. Death is there. It's red with gore everywhere."
"Some 10 men have fallen, perhaps more. Over yonder, do you hear, sir?"
There was another boom, and the castle shook.
"Magic," muttered Skellen. "Vilgefortz. Well, we shall see. We'll find out who is beating whom."
Another hireling came running. He was pale and covered in plaster. For a long time, he couldn't utter a word,
and when he finally spoke, his hands trembled and his voice shook.
There's a monster, Lord Coroner, like a great black flittermouse. It was tearing people's heads off before my very eyes. Blood was gushing everywhere, and it was darting around and laughing. It had teeth like this.
We won't escape with our lives, whispered a voice behind Tawny Owl's back.
Lord Coroner.
Boreas Munn decided to speak.
They are spectres. I saw the young Graf Kaya Ap Kyalak, but he's dead.
Skellen looked at him, but didn't say anything.
Lord Stefan,
mumbled Dacre Siliphant,
who are we to fight here?
They aren't men, groaned one of the mercenaries.
They're sorcerers and hellish devils. Human strength cannot cope against such as them.
Tawny Owl crossed his arms on his chest and swept a bold and imperious gaze over the mercenaries.
So, we shall not get involved in this conflict of hellish forces, he announced thunderously and emphatically. Let demons fight with demons, witches with witches, and ghosts with corpses risen from the grave. We won't interfere with them. We shall wait here calmly for the outcome of the battle.
The mercenaries' faces brightened up. The morale rose perceptibly.
That staircase is the only way out,
Skellen continued in a powerful voice.
We'll wait here. We shall see who tries coming down it.
A terrible boom resounded from above, and mouldings fell from the vault with an audible rustle. There was a stench of sulphur and burning.
It's too dark here,
called Tawny Owl, thunderously and boldly to raise his troop spirits.
Briskly, light whatever you can, torches, brands. We have to see well whoever appears on those stairs. Fill those iron cressets with some fuel or other.
What kind of fuel, sir?
Skellen indicated wordlessly what kind.
Pictures,
a mercenary asked in disbelief.
Paintings?
Yes, indeed,
snorted Tawny Owl.
Why are you looking like that? Art is dead.
Frames were splintered and paintings shredded. The well-dried wood and canvas, saturated with linseed oil, caught fire immediately and flared up with a bright flame. Boreas Munn watched, his mind completely made up. There was a boom and a flash, and the column they had managed to jump away from at almost the last moment disintegrated. The shaft broke. The capital, decorated with acanthus leaves, crashed to the floor, destroying a terracotta mosaic. A ball of lightning hurtled towards them with a hiss. Yennefer deflected it, screaming out a spell and gesticulating. Vilgefortz walked towards them, his cloak fluttering like a dragon's wings.
I am not surprised at Yennefer, he said as he walked. She is a woman, and thus an evolutionary inferior creature governed by hormonal chaos. But you, Geralt, are not only a man who is sensible by nature, but also a mutant, invulnerable to emotions.
He waved a hand. There was a boom and a flash. A lightning bolt bounced off the shield Yennefer had conjured up.
In spite of your good sense,
Vilgefortz continued to talk, pouring fire from hand to hand.
In one matter, you demonstrate astounding and foolish perseverance. You invariably desire to row upstream and piss into the wind. It had to end badly. Know that today, here in Stigger Castle, you have pissed into a hurricane.
A battle was raging somewhere on the lower stories. Someone screamed horribly, moaned and wailed in pain. Something was burning. Ciri could smell smoke and burning and felt a waft of hot air. Something boomed with such force that the columns holding up the vault trembled and stuccos fell off the walls. Ciri cautiously looked around the corner. The corridor was empty. She walked along it quickly and silently, with rows of statues standing in alcoves on her right and left. She had seen those statues once. In her dreams. She exited the corridor and ran straight into a man with a spear. She sprang aside, ready to dodge and somersault. And then she realized it wasn't a man, but a thin, grey-haired, stooped woman, and that it wasn't a spear, but a broom.
A sorceress with black hair is imprisoned somewhere around here.
Ciri cleared her throat.
Where?
The woman with the broom was silent for a long time, moving her mouth as though chewing something.
And how should I know treasure? She finally mumbled. For I only clean here. Nothing else. Just clean up after them,
she repeated, not looking at Ciri at all.
And all they do is keep dirt in the place. Look for yourself, treasure.
Ciri looked. There was a smudged zigzag streak of blood on the floor. The streak extended for a few paces and ended beside a corpse huddled up by the wall. Two more corpses lay further on, one curled up in a ball, the other positively indecently spread-eagled. Beside them lay crossbows.
They keep making a mess.
The woman took a pail and rag, kneeled down and set about cleaning.
Dirt. Nothing but dirt. All the time, dirt. And I must clean and clean. Will there ever be an end to it?
No, Ciri said softly. Never. That's what this world's come to.
The woman stopped cleaning, but didn't raise her head.
I clean, she said. Nothing more. But I'll tell you, treasure, that you must go straight and then left.
Thank you.
The woman bowed her head even lower and resumed her cleaning. She was alone, alone and lost in the maze of corridors.
Madame Yennefer!
Up until then, she had kept quiet, afraid of saddling herself with Vilgefortz's men. But now...
Yennefer!
She thought she'd heard something. Yes, for sure. She ran into a gallery, and from there into a large hall between slender pillars. The stench of burning reached her nostrils again. Bonnard emerged like a ghost from a niche and punched her in the face. She staggered, and he leapt on her like a hawk, seized her by the throat, pinning her to the wall with his forearm. Ciri looked into his fish-like eyes and felt her heart drop downwards to her belly.
I wouldn't have found you if you hadn't called, he wheezed out. But you called, and longingly, to cap it all off. Have you missed me so, my little darling?
Still pinning her to the wall, he slipped his hand into the hair on her nape. Ciri jerked her head. The bounty hunter grinned. He ran his hand over her arm, squeezed her breast, and grabbed her roughly by the crotch. Then he released her and pushed her so that she slid down the wall and tossed a sword at her feet. Her swallow. And she knew at once what he wanted.
I'd have preferred it in the ring, he drawled. As the crowning achievement, as the grand finale of many beautiful performances. The Witcher Girl against Leo Bonnard. Eh? People would pay to see something like that. Go on, pick up the weapon and draw it from the scabbard.
She did as he said, but she didn't draw the blade, just slung it across her back so the hilt would be within reach. Bonnard took a step back.
I thought it would suffice me to gladden my eyes with the sight of that surgery Vilgefortz is preparing for you, he said. I was mistaken. I must feel your life flowing down my blade. I defy witchcraft and sorcerers, destiny, prophecies, the fate of the world. I defy the elder and younger blood. What do all these predictions and spells mean to me? What do I gain from them? Nothing. Nothing can compare with the pleasure.
He broke off. She saw him purse his lips, saw his eyes flash ominously.
I'll bleed you to death, witcher girl, he hissed. And afterwards, before you cool off, we'll celebrate our nuptials. You are mine, and you will die mine.
Draw your weapon.
A distant thud resounded, and the castle shuddered.
We'll